You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hey, how are ya?
It's Niall.
How are ye?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of June the 8th to June the 14th, 2020. And we can't start off with Super Shearer this week because it hasn't been fan-subbed yet.
No habla espanole.
So if we're lucky, we may get two next week. But this is a command licensing companies pick up Super Shearer. Having said that, if they did, I bet we still wouldn't be able to watch it due to outstanding license agreements.
Restrictions.
In Europe
area.
And the Middle East, yeah, yes.
Yeah. Well, the guy get that Shin-Chan money.
Yeah, but you can buy Shin-Chan episodes, don't you? 3DS.
Still?
Well, I assume so. I haven't checked recently. I know the ones I've already got are all still, I can still view them through my 3DS.
Hmm.
So instead, we start with Woodpecker Detective's Office, Episode 9, Events Fulfilled. And as much as I enjoyed this episode, there does seem to be a little bit too much of a formula of the person who hired them, or the person we think is a good person, they did it. And they are technically a good person, but they still did it.
Hmm.
Even though it turns out the thing which had been done didn't get done, which was the nice twist. And then we get a tragic ending at the end. So they find in the roof space a button. This is the clue. And they're like, ah, last episode we found a shirt, didn't we, in the house that we investigated. And it had no, but it was missing a button.
Mm.
So this must be the shirt of Kagami's brother, and Kagami's brother must have been here. So that's what he's going for. And then they go and look at the church, and they meet a bunch of children, and the children ask, "Is it Takami? Is that the woman's name?"
You know, I've bloody well forgotten.
No, anyway, the woman who's hired him, they ask where their friend had disappeared. And she's like, I'm sure she's with a nice family now, or been adopted by a nice family. And this is referring back to what the letter had told about her husband, that he was selling children to rich families as part of his philanthropy towards the Catholic Church. They go inside the church, and Ishikawa was like, wow, this is beautiful. I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about the stained glass window over there.
Subtly covered up.
Yes, and, confession, that's very romantic and poetic. Yes, he's really taken aback, and he wants to make a donation. And then his landlady shows up, and it's like, if you've got money to throw around, you can pay your rent. when he gets back home, he's finding some books to pawn so he can get some money.
Wasn't he pawning one of his friend's books as well?
Yes, it was a book.
It's like, hey, isn't that a book I lent you? It's like, yeah, I mean, it's going to a good cause.
I'll buy it back later.
Fuck's sake.
Their mates are like discussing this at the cafe, and they're like indignant, some of them are, but then they don't realize, oh, he's doing it for love.
Well, it's not only love, but it's like he's donating to a charitable cause, and it's like slightly better than his usual spending monies, but yeah.
And I can't remember how they end up going back to investigate the house. Oh, there's ghosts. Is it Hirai mentioned seeing the ghosts? Because it's all Hirai manipulating the pair of them to go back to the house.
Yeah, he's in the cafe and he's like, I heard this place was haunted. And, you know, that gives them the tip that they should check out this spooky house.
Yes. So once again,
there's no one living in it, but there's lights on it and sometimes. And I was like, well, that just suggests there's a person in there, right?
Yes. The youngest character is the one who's actually doing all the detective work and having to manipulate the adults into getting from point A to point B. Yeah, so there is a flickering light. So Ishikawa gets... Oh God, he's barely been in it, but the other main character, whose name I've now unfortunately forgotten, to stand by the door because he doesn't tell him that he's got to stop the guy who runs out. He just assumes that he will.
Yeah, he's like, I'm too scared to go in. I'm a scared of ghost Shaggy. And yeah, he's going to, I'll just check her on the back. And he's like, I'll spook him out the way. Or maybe he made that up on the fly because he just lobs a rock through the window, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He just lobs a rock at the guy. And the guy runs. Kinde actually falls over as this guy just emerges from the house. But then Ishikawa comes back around the house. I thought you're going to stop him because I'm not going to stop anybody. But then the guy has been stopped by the child, the teenager, Hirai.
Who's been following him in the background, which was nicely done, yeah.
And they recognize him as the beggar from under the bridge, and they pay him a great deal of money to get some information. And they learn that he moved in straight away as soon as the Batman had died. Mm. And they were like, were there any shirts here? Yes, but I did pawn the one without the button because you couldn't get any money because it was already missing a button. And then you're like, you've got enough information as the viewer to say, oh, the story that the woman's been telling does not add up.
Yeah, and also the thing is, like, has anyone been to the house? And it's like, there was a man and a woman there, but I legged it when they did. And I was like, oh, that was us. Okay,
yeah,
so.
That's it, yeah. So then Ishikawa has put everything together and he's rushing back, you think, to save her if you're not paying attention, but he's actually... Well, I guess he is rushing back to save her. He's rushing back to stop her from murdering her husband.
My main question is fucking why? Fuck that guy.
Because he doesn't want the weight of murdering somebody on her. Because he's a romantic.
Yeah, I feel like she's got a different weight on her that's causing her to murder, basically.
Yes. You know? Yes, that's the thing. But yeah, the other characters she points out is that yes, he's a poet, he's got an imagination. And yeah, so he gets there and the policeman's already there because he's been told there's been a murder. And so initially suspect of Ishikawa is like, oh, he's the murderer? Because the wife has called the police and told them there was a suspicious man staring through the window on the second floor. And she explains her side of the story to the cop, and then Ishikawa takes her aside and then into her private room where he does the old detective work of rubbing a pencil along the top of a notepad to see what the last message was.
Love that trick.
Like, I've learned if I'm going to commit any crimes that involve writing things down, I use one sheet of paper and just one sheet of paper.
It's great though, all the best ones do it.
Yeah.
Even the big Lebowski.
Yes, that is that's great. So he points out that there was never a brother, and then she explains why she's done this. She's not actually a wife; she's a mistress who's been bought. Mm. And when she tried to report to the police that he was selling children, he took the hot poker and scarred her across the chest with it.
Yeah, because he got off scot-free, because the people he sells children to are very powerful and influential, and he gets away with all the crimes he does for the crimes that he does. So, yeah, you can't really catch this motherfucker.
Yeah, and the Batman was dying of some sort of terminal disease, and he was afraid of death, and she was like, well, you're afraid of death because you think your life will have been meaningless, but we can add meaning to your death by making it look like my husband killed you. But even that didn't work.
Yep, he got off scot-free for that again, and it's like, well, I guess I just have to fucking kill him then. I can't do him for the crimes he did do. I can't set him up for a crime he didn't do, so I'll just fucking kill him, make it look like someone else did it. Cool.
Yes, she pushed him out the window when he went to close the curtain.
See, initially I thought she was a bit callous, like blaming this guy's brother for it. It's like, oh, he didn't even have a brother, so no one is going to be to blame for this. An imaginary man is going to be to blame for this. Yeah.
There's also a bit where Ishikawa is kind of hoping that she's also the person who's been doing all the other murders.
Because of the confession letter things. It's like, that seems like this was your plan in this case, so maybe you did this in the other ones, and it would wrap it up all really nicely.
And she's like, no, that's just the poet in you. You've got a very active imagination.
Mm.
And then the policeman comes in with her husband because they fished him out the river.
Mm. He's actually like set up set up some police outside the house just in case. So they saw your man fall out the window and they're like, oh, fuck. They actually picked him up straight away, basically.
And then they have a conversation. She's been led away, and then she breaks off to hug Ishikawa and also take the letter opener off the desk.
As soon as I saw that when they opened the door to that room, I was like, oh, that's getting used.
And also basically tell Ishikawa, you're dying, find some meaning in your life.
Mm.
And then attempts to kill her husband again, but instead the husband kills her.
So he murders his mistress in front of the fucking chief detective guy, and I'm guessing he's still going to get off with it, right?
Quite possibly. I mean, it doesn't look like it's going very well for Ishikawa, just by the thumbnail of next week's episode.
Jesus, no, yeah.
Yeah, you've seen him, like, fairly full of life, even when he's been coughing and spluttering, but the thumbnail for next week, he's incredibly gaunt, near death.
Mm. You don't look well.
I was like, oh, Kate, okay. Yeah, they're really laying it in there with this being his last few months on Earth.
Hmm.
So a good episode, except, yeah, it's the beat of, like, it feels a little similar beats to previous mysteries.
Hmm.
In terms of, like, who the culprit turns out to be. But I think that might be thematic. It may work better when you read it in the novel and you haven't got the other additional
You know the structure of how the cases work. So it works better in that regard, maybe?
Because, yeah, the little touch of her being, like, the bought mistress, that ties back into Ishikawa of, like...
selling on someone, yeah.
Well, he wasn't selling on, but he was taking the money to find her.
It was like an equivalency. It's like, is he that far removed from the husband, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's echoes in this case in his own life.
Mm-hmm.
Which tied it all nicely together. And
I would tie it together even nicer, that it solves all the other cases as well.
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of like him. That's how he wants the story to have been written.
And, it'd be nice and neat, yeah, for sure.
But no, it's not going to be that nice and neat for him. And I guess we head into our last mystery next week.
Hmm.
Then you can tell me all about Fruits Basket Season 2, Episode 10, Who Are You?
Ooh, 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 ooh. I really want to know. Well, we have to find out again. It's who is Akito, or what is Akito to the entire Summa family?
Mm.
It's the last day of a little summer holiday. But they're going to have a little send-off now because it's been kind of moping around, visiting Akito, even Toru by herself. Going to have one day where we're going to do something fun. So I got a bunch of fireworks. I'm going to let them on off the beach day after tomorrow. Sounds class.
They're letting them off like tomorrow night because it's like, well, we're going the day after that, so we won't have another night to do fireworks.
Yeah. But, you know, we're not being called in. Let's just kind of hang around here and watch the new episode of Mogi Tales on telly. The kids are all about it. It seems kind of a weird anime. It's all fun. Everyone wants to be around. And especially because when Toru overhears a conversation between Kyo and Momiji, where it's just, you guys are all coming in there, you know, even though you fucking hate Akito. But you went in there because you didn't want Akito to do anything bad to Toru. You're trying to protect her.
You keep Akito satisfied, she won't come after Toru, that kind of way. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but they feel like, oh, but fun lying to her, though. I feel like, you know, it's weird to be having to process and deal with all this talking things in the background away without her knowing, or I think she doesn't know, and they're up this happy front of hanging out with her. I feel like that disingenuous. Just overhears that, and just you know, kind of comes in. They don't make any more about it, but just kind of feeling like, oh, these lads are going to allow grief over me. And
well, they're literally putting themselves in a shitty position that makes them uncomfortable and unhappy to keep her happier, because that makes them happier than they would be if she was involved.
Yeah. that doesn't really pay off though, because Akito, before the parting out of their midst and away from the holiday, said, I might just, before I leave, call in this Toru Honda person. I've actually met her yet. I haven't actually seen her. It would be awfully rude if I didn't do that.
So she was about to give a right bollocking to our dog guy, because it's like, you're up to shit. You don't look at me the way you used to. There's something else. Is it her? And then it's like, gets a call. It's like, hey, you're calling back to the Soma estate. It's like, all right, I got one more thing to do then, just before I go.
They're just going to roll up here on a rainy night, just creepily stroll into the garden, like I'm trying to break into the place. But that's just the kind of person Akito is. Then it's just things taking this from just saunter in here, just break into this house in the dead of night, and no one will say anything to me. Umiji tries to stop him, gets five across the eyes for his trouble.
I get straight up punched rather than like anything light, which I was just like, I thought it was a good moment for Umiji, because he's like, he's really trying to stand up as much as he can. Which isn't fucking easy.
That's a real thing that you notice here, especially, is that, oh, Umiji is the cute little rabbit. He's always so cheerful and positive and childlike, even though he's like one, say, maybe a little younger than like Yuki or Kiyo or any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But science, like internally or privately, has this very, I suppose, mature or, yeah, I suppose kind of mature and considered outlook on the whole situation. So can just like really feel the pain, the kind of the sorrow there when he was talking to Kyo earlier about, I just feel like I'm fucking lying to her. I just want to get out of this. I want to feel like I can be totally open with her, you know, that don't feel right. Yeah. And then as she comes in, oh, I'm a cute bunny rabbit, time to go watch the cartoons on the telly. Oh, ho, ho. And the thing is, you're really probably stressing yourself out trying to maintain this act for so long. And
it's half act and half, like, he's just acting like the person he wants to be, like acting for the job he wants kind of thing. He doesn't have this happy-go-lucky life, but he wants to act like it, so it feels as if that's the life he's living. That kind of
one. Toru, who's, just gotten up because the rest of the can't sleep, sees this commotion out on the lawn and intervenes. And what's going on here? Steps in between Akito and Momiji before it gets any more, it kind of blows any further. And Akito has this taste opportunity to give, the same thing I've been wanting to say to you. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are, butting in and all
that? Notions above your station, all that kind of talking down to Toru.
I fucking let you know what's going to happen here. I've already made this clear or this to the rest of them now. All your things you've been doing, you've been trying to button in these guys, giving them false hopes, trying to give them any kind of hope at all. I'll tell you what's going to happen now. They're all going to live with me. Once the two lads finish school, they're all going to come and live with me in this state. I'm going to live there, and we're all going to die there.
And the cat, he's going to be locked up for the rest of his natural life. So that's it. That's the way it's going to be. And Toru's like, wait a minute, this sounds like a little more than what a rooster would be saying. This seems like a little more than a rooster. Yeah.
It's interesting. It sounds, it's like there's something else. It's like to the Soma family, I stand above all. I command their souls. And they will do what I say in this life and the next. And it's like, oh, God. Just hasn't hit home yet, just flashing back to the story that Toru's mom used to tell her about the animals going to the banquet. And who are they going to the banquet with? They meet God. And
I mean, like, the story does start with God was having a banquet and then a bunch of animals. So it's like, oh, you're that character from the story. Oh, that's bad. and like, really rubbing that in by like digging nails into Toru's face and just like it's not even like a quick like scratch, it was like a slow fucking claw. Oh, it was nasty. Didn't like that.
It's really digging in and getting disgusted there. And it hasn't come across clear enough to her or anybody else when Kureno comes by. Oh, Kureno, I didn't see you there. Oh, how rude of me. Sorry. Honda-san, this is Kureno. He's the rooster in the Zodiac. Hi, how are you going? boss, you want to go home? Oh, yeah. I think I said my piece here.
They're done here for now.
Yeah. This is Shigure and Hattori come out. This is trying to intervene. Trying to bundle her up. Toru was just hug Momiji because this is a real trooper. to
try and Meiji ran to get the grown-ups to try and break up any fights. And Yuranta, like Hattori's kind of like, it's like, I'm supposed to go back to the mansion, but I'll be a little late. I'll fix you guys up first.
Yeah, and all the lads are inside the sitting room. They're kind of waiting. It's like they're fun waiting behind the curtain. They really want to just fun rush in there and just fun raise help, but they fucking are compelled to by Akito like not to do so, and they feel pathetic for doing so. Fun saying, "I want to fucking rush in and save it," but a fucking this bastard has this hold over me, and I can't release myself from that. I feel awful about that.
And that's one of the things Toru's thinking about from what Akito said to Toru, where it's like, they're all bound to me by the invisible chains of fate, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, I guess Akito's also bound by that as well, if they're all bound by this fairy tale, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's just, if this is all you've ever known, and if you're like, no, this is your fate and your destiny, and this is all you can ever like hope to be or aspire to be, or what you've told that is all you can be, then just going to maybe embrace it wholeheartedly. And if that's
and that's the curse of the actual curse, not so much turning into animals, that you're bound to this fucking wheel of fate kind of thing.
Yeah, you must all be together no matter what. But they're going to go and have some kind of one, but you should awesome fireworks the next day, and like, they're having fun, and Toru is processing the whole thing again, putting on a brave face, even though she's got a big bandage across her cheek.
Yeah, Toru and Momiji are going to keep it quiet, and they both don't have to say it. It's just like, because everyone else is just worried about it if we fucking mention it.
Yeah. And there's just like, you know, Kyo, he's shot off fireworks with a Shito before, and it's he wouldn't have shown that kid fireworks if he didn't want to have like a better life, a better future for him. And Yuki wouldn't be really against everything so hard in case he saw a better future for him as well. And
like she says as much, she's seen them change. She's seen them actively try to change and become different, better people. And it's like, they wouldn't do that in order to not be that in the wider world. They wouldn't hope for a future if they knew they had a very specific future.
Yeah. And I'm fully aware of all they've been going through, all the things that maybe that they've wanted to do but haven't been able to, and the despair they might be feeling about that. And even with all this weight heaped upon them, they're still like going through this whole fucking charade, all this whole facade just to try and protect me as well. But I want to do something for them. So before the lads finish school, I'm going to find out how to break this fucking curse and free them all so they can be aware of all this and live life as I want to be and to be happy with them.
Yeah, so even like Toru being warned is like, don't interfere with them, they're not yours, they're mine, that kind of thing. She's like, I'm gonna make sure they get the thing that they're obviously working towards.
Yeah, I will let them decide who they want to be.
Like a really kind of like positive hope for the future kind of thing after such a like a horrible everything's fucked episode.
But even having such compassion and empathy for somebody who physically assaulted you and just
said
all sorts of appalling things to you. Still think, well, I want to try and put myself in their shoes and think, well, if they're probably constrained by this curse in the same way, and you know, maybe they want something better for themselves, but they can't because of this whole deal. So maybe by doing this, I'll be able to help everybody out. And definitely the people, all these lovely folks here who I care about, but Akita was Mel, maybe this could help them, help them with whatever they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Woman is a saint, you know?
Yeah.
You're kind of argue that, oh, she's too good, she's too nice, but we see that this is all informed by her upbringing, you know?
Her upbringing and the people around her. Yeah, it's a logical progression. And it's nice to see as well that all this tragedy and terribleness doesn't make her worse, or she doesn't give up based on the thing of there is no hope. It's like, well, actually I think there is.
Yeah, I mean, she's also not invincible, you know. She was fucking knocked back in her ass by that, and the lads noticed that, and they're thinking, oh, even she's not impervious to this. But she just dusts herself back up, she's bandaged up, and she's ready to take on this thing. She's got this fucking, that's a goal in sight. We got a ticking clock to try and finish it by.
Hmm.
It's gonna fucking
It's also nice to make her a character. I think she comes across better than the manga, I gotta say. Like, there's more... She's still, like, a dope and a ditz and constantly falling over and whatnot, but she's way more, like... She comes across as way more intuitive as to, especially people's emotional states. It works quite well.
Yeah, there are times where she can just, just happens to be hanging out with them and she just knows the right thing to say or the right thing to do, and it's just nice. But it's like how changing her around, she's becoming even more someone more active.
Proactive, for sure.
She's got like a fucking a quest that she's got to finish out, and she's going to just do it in her own way, which would probably involve talking to a lot of people and getting to know them and trying to empathize with them and come to meet somewhere in the middle, which she does.
Yeah. Still good stuff.
Yeah, really nice. Even a kind of contrast between this, the very intense atmospheric confrontation on the lawn in the middle of a thunderstorm, and then you have this nice sunset on the beach and letting off fireworks. I think this is just another anime that's been fairly consistent in how it looks. A lot of this is just kind of very nice pans across these like lovely character designs and all, because often
with a lot more simplistic, like they don't do particularly complicated animation.
A lot of the scenes are conversations between people, you know, usually very tense and very harrowing and fraught conversations, but it is all in the framing and the color choice, audio design, how they kind of build the atmosphere. And it's been, I think, like, consistent in that regard. Again, it's a solid production all the way through, feels to me. But I'm finally going home for the beach anyway, and I had to go back to school sometime, and we get back into the rhythm of that. And also we get to see everybody else in again, because, you know, there's characters you miss sometimes, like for all the Sumo folks who are here, it hasn't been Ayame, who I like seeing because he's can be annoying to some, but I kind of find amusing, but I guess he's got a business to run, so he can't be taking time off to go hang around on the beach, can't.
Righty-ho, then we've got another thing I need you both to tell me about.
Sorry.
Tower of God 11, Underwater Hunt Part 1.
Final exam.
Yeah, final exams. The big one, and then they go to the top of the tower, or one of them gets to go. I'm not exactly sure how the fuck, but it is a very complicated test. Of course it is.
Yeah.
It's simple, but complicated. How about that?
So there are these dolphins, we're calling that dolphins. They live in the water, but they can control the Shinsu magic water to make nets to trap fish, which they feed to, oddly enough for a dolphin, which implies a mammal, they have a queen, which is some kind of bulbous thing that lives...
Like a giant seashell that has an opening into the water, but it has its main body on land.
So, the way it's going to work is that Bam and Rachel, they're going to be in a bubble in the water, and the... Dolphins are going to form a net and they're going to catch them and going to feed them into the queen, you know. But they'll pass through it unharmed. So
the queen only eats fish, so she'll spit them out onto land. And as soon as the queen spits you out onto land, test fucking succeeded. You've done it.
However.
And then, everyone in the class is kind of like, hey, what the fuck do the rest of us do? It's like, oh, that's the complicated bit.
So we got sort of these dolphins that are the fish in a way, but they also have their own natural predators. We have these
barnacle goblins.
Goblins who are coming in. They have these giant worms that they bring around on them, and the worms they just dip down into water and they eat the dolphins.
So what they kind of do is, as the dolphins are hunting, they're trying to steal their catch and also catch some dolphins for themselves.
Yeah. So. Need to watch out for them and make sure that they don't interfere. And accidentally, one of the worms eats Baron Rich in the bubble, because if that happens, then you fail the test and that's over it.
I'm not entirely sure if they're dead in that case, but it doesn't seem good.
There's also the bull going around.
They also mention a badger, which is like everything kind of runs away from. Like, I don't know what the deal is. It's not a badger, but they call it
a striped earth pig.
Sorry, my bad. It's like, watch out for that guy because he scares off the dolphins and, you know. The goblins stay away from him, so he just fucks up the whole thing. So that's the thing. But if the bull comes in, run away from the bull is incredibly dangerous.
I guess
it's not really a bull, but you know, they just call it one.
Is it like the bull of the Deathtops? They don't really kind of clarify that too much, but I presume, like, no, if you have like the queen there, is this the bull? Is this like the head male of the shoal or flock or pod, whatever these are? Anyway, it's just like hugely kind of intimidating, terrifying looking creature. It's either wearing a cape or it's got a long kind of mantle.
It's like an eel man with an eyeball on one side of its head. Its head, like, just is a slit that runs all the way from the front to back and makes a mouth. It has a big slimy looking cape and like a dingly dangly angerfish thing that it can use to grab people. And it just wants to kill and eat things.
Fuck people up. So that's all. It's bad. All of your jobs is to keep these things away from Bannermage in the bubble and
nature take its course. Yeah.
Yes. Essentially, our job is to make sure the dolphins can hunt freely. So, okay, good going. We'll get on to the plan then. Naturally, Coon is going to be coordinating this, but it's more open to different teams. We have Hats, Paracool, and Rack going to be keeping an eye on the goblins and the big worms.
They have to attack at a particular time, and they're constantly like, do we attack the goblins now? It's like, no, wait. And it's like, oh, God damn it, we should probably attack the goblins now. And he's like, no. There's a perfect time for this.
You got Shibisu is going to be like, kind of scouting around, looking for the bull and keeping an eye on its whereabouts. But do not engage, but tell that to Endorsky and Anak, who are along with them, do just want to fight things, so they're just going to go fight this bull.
Yeah, Coon is initially worried. It's like, ah, fuck, I can't see what's going on underground. But that little girl with the pot is like, hey, I can control fish soul magic or some fucking bollocks. And he's like, that's actually really fucking useful. And he's like, yeah, it's not for attacking, but it's pretty good. And he's like, could you control like a fish like the bull or the dolphins or something? And she's like, nah, I couldn't do anything like that. And he's like, could one of the test administrators do it? And he's like, yeah, probably. They're pretty strong.
Maybe.
Maybe someone could control the bull.
Already two of the secondary dudes, I can't remember what their names are.
Did they get names?
I think it was the fellow with the mohawk, and there's another sort of
the guy in a t-shirt. I don't know, doesn't matter, they're dead, but can't
seem to find them anywhere.
There's just blood stains on the ground. It's like, hey, the guy's just, they're gone, and he's like, what? That's not good.
Jeff. And I get endorsed here fighting the bull. It retreats off into the show. But they're doing it in 5-minute turns. But then, okay.
Well, initially they're fighting and then I get 5 minutes. The dude in the mascot costume shows up and goes like, hey, I'm here to steal your sword and, you know, maybe kill you because I'm from the government. But I'm not going to do it. I'm going to use the bull to do it.
Well, you're going to use the bull to lure him away for a start and split them up. And Dorsey chases after it, but then it was holding back all this time and it easily overpowers her. And then Ren, the royal official, was come by, royal investigator, inspector, and did the guy in the big costume. Is it a costume or is it his body? It's weird.
Not entirely clear, yeah.
But arrives then to taunt Anak, looking for something, and just whips out of his long tongue her mother's necklace. It's like, what the fuck are you doing with that? No, I'm just here to tidy up these little messes, little things that shouldn't be here, like you. And easily overpowers her as well. You know, we know how to press her buttons, but overpowers her pretty easily as well. And being real shit about it as well.
It used to be filled with monsters, as far as I could fucking
tell. With monsters. It's got is there a person inside with the big eyeballs in there?
Because when he pulls out the necklace, he's just swirling around on apparently a tongue from the mascot. So yeah, I don't exactly know what's going on in there.
Real with her. Nice like tongue animation on that.
Gross tongue.
Yeah, which she is quite prehensile. So like, also stabbed straight to a person like Anak, who gets impaled on it.
So Anak is bleeding out. She tries to grab her green. Is it Green April or Green March? I've forgotten the name.
That's a Green April, and she has it back.
But your man scoops it up in his mouth, and he's like, "All right, that's part of my job done." Is that when the bull comes in with the other one who's completely... The bull is much tougher all of a sudden. She's like, wait a minute, you weren't this tough when I was fighting you earlier. What the fuck?
Yeah, but dumps him down for him saying, well, you should fulfill your duty as a princess of Jahad and take care of this fake princess. So you kill her. You kill Anak for me.
That she's like the daughter of the guy who climbed the tower, but I'm not sure if that's just what you'd call the princess of Jihad anyway.
That's what they kind of call him on anyway.
Yeah. I don't think it's like she's got a particular relation, but anyway.
Yeah. That's it now. Even though they're at each other's throats like a few episodes back, I feel like there's this grudging respect between them right now, so it won't be...
Yeah, I mean, like it became like the rivalry of let's see who can kill the bull first. If I win, I get your swords. And if what do I get if I win? It's like, I'll be your servant for life. You know, it's just like, much and all is that's fairly high stakes gambling. They're not trying to kill each other. They're trying to outdo one another. So there is kind of like a, a slightly better than trying to murder each other relationship. How about that?
Like, we know as well that Dorsey has been fairly put to the ringer by this prisoner to have process herself.
Yeah.
So I think they have like a common ground of a sort.
For sure. Yeah. They've both been fucked by it, but completely fucked over by it.
Yeah. The other planet's fucked as well, because fucking Paracule, the idiot, the stupid fucking green, thin, lanky idiot, throws a spear when he shouldn't have when one of the goblin dudes gets too close, and that just sets them all off. And now we've got all these goblin dudes and the worms bearing down on top of us, and Coon's like, you motherfucking idiot, I had a whole plan in mind, you wrecked it.
Dear.
What else is going on? Is this all on the planet's going to shit? You have Bab and Richard just kind of floating gently in a bubble of wind. Oh, it's so lovely. And the fish is blowing and swirling around us. It's so nice.
And they're talking about, it's like, oh, well, we have a relationship. And it's like, this is nice. And oh, everything's going great from their point of view, because nothing has gone, everything's gone wrong on the outside of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like Bam being just a top number one guy, if I'm saying, oh, aren't you scared? If I'm saying, no, I'm not scared, because if I was anxious, I'd make you anxious too, Rachel. So I wanted, no, keep it calm. Anyway, that's nice in here. It's good. Despite what I think you said before, you know, about if I need, is there any reason to climb a tower now that all this happened, or if you don't pass a test, what'll happen? If I'm saying, well, if I'm somewhere with you, then. That's what matters to me, because you've always been this person I hold in quite regard, and you're the shining light. You brought me out of a dark place, and that's something I'm not going to forget and drop easily, no matter what happens to me. But as well, I'm thinking, and it flashed through my mind when I made the meeting with the eldritch horror that dwells inside the tower before the test was begun here. It's kind of... take like kind of probed in his mind as you know, what is your like reasoning for wanting to proceed up the tower? And I thought of you at first, obviously, Rachel, but I also thought of all the people I was hanging out with, you know, and actually just eating lunch together and half gone close to them. And it's nice that the rest of the gang feel the same way. Where Bam was just a super nice fella that everyone is getting on with, and she's bringing out the best in them, as Shibisu says about.
It's something along the lines of, he says, like, Bam, the thing, why are you helping him out, Kun asks. And he says, like, well, he, like, has that kind of spark in him that we've all fucking lost.
Yeah. The ways of the world hasn't crushed his spirit just yet.
They want to keep that aloft, basically. See how that works out for him, I guess.
Let's see how part two goes. Yep, I doubt it's going to pass this test, and all, and will it get knocked back down to square one again, or will it pass the test? But it'll be a kind of, you know, you gotta be shown the matrix, you gotta be shown what a tower actually is and how the structure is set up. Because there are forces that have arrived quite deliberately to try, and they wanted us to go along a set path.
Yeah.
No one's actually meant to get to the top or get to the end. Well, if someone gets close, we gotta like step in here and pull it to rights. Which is why I don't like irregulars coming in, which means irregulars can take this administrator's test and possibly,
which is incredibly dangerous, yes.
But it just feels like it's a rigged system. So even if we have like an irregular who comes in, we say we take this test, but it's just going to end in failure no matter what we do, because we've engineered it as such so that we can maintain the status quo for ourselves.
Then we've got Wacky TV Na Na Na, Episode 9, Streaming Shipboard Side Hustle Habits, in which we learn the Redbeard Pirates supplement their income by being nanatubers.
Oh, a thing I just noticed this episode, don't know how it fucking took me this long, is the thing on your man's hat, a Whitebeard fucking logo, but with an eye patch.
General pirate flag.
I know, but it's a pirate flag with like a mustache specifically. I know he has a mustache, so they can get away with it. And also, it has a banana shaped head.
Well, like I say, it couldn't have been inspired, certainly. But, you know, lots of the like
pirate. It could just be a fan of Whitebeard. I don't know.
So, they're going to, rather than just letting these three people from Wacky TV Na 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 hang around tied up, they'll get them to produce content for Redbeard's channel. And the more subscribers they add, the lower their ransom will be. So the more likely that they'll be paid.
Hmm.
And so basically they do a load. They're like, ah, oh, we'll show you what professional television production can do, which is basically do a load of make the assistant director do various terrible things.
Various do challenges. All your challenge videos. Yeah.
Yes.
You're doing a squid ink challenge.
And this results in Redbeard only having 3 subscribers by the end of the episode.
It's probably just going to increase their ransom.
We're waiting a while for that money to come in.
Yeah. So the other gang is not only are they doing it to the assistant director, they're also doing it to one of the pigeons each time as well.
Mm.
Maybe
it's the animal cruelty the subscribers didn't like.
Yeah, I think my favourite gag was after they were doing the real-life pop-up pirate.
That was pretty great.
As they're talking about the subscription, the subscribers dropping to 3, is the assistant director is pulling out the pop-up pirate swords out of his body.
The little sword clips, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's half banana, man.
Exactly, yes.
Mm.
And also, one of the challenges is the seagull challenge, which is basically either seagulls pecking him.
They weren't particularly great. I was full sure these pirates were going to be into like internet piracy as well, but streaming apparently is a great source of revenue.
Yeah, but the pirates saying they're going to resort to plundering the high seas of income. They're not going to leave any possible source of money untapped, are they?
Yeah, and,
You know, they're hanging around. They got some good signal on the boat. I guess they got their own Wi-Fi tower there or whatever.
It's a pretty big boat, so yeah, okay.
I mean, they're all broadcasting at once. That's a good setup they got there, isn't it?
Mm.
But yeah, obviously, it's yet more self-depreciation on TV Tokyo's or their behalf. Well, is it TV Tokyo's behalf? Is them doing self-depreciation on TV Tokyo's behalf, whether TV Tokyo like it or not? But I guess TV Tokyo have aired it, so that's fine.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's about how kids these days don't watch TV.
If you do a segment that would be not too far off a challenge you'd do on YouTube or something like that, it's just like, because you've framed it as a TV show, no one's going to fucking watch it.
Yeah. But probably as well, just because they probably always a step behind in terms of like whatever the social media thing is. And they're never really innovative, just latch on to whatever the fad is and just say, hey, we're with it. We can do the ice bucket challenge as well. Yeah. Mm. Their folly is trying to make that into like a whole thing. Which may explain why there's so many like those celebrity humiliation programs. It's a form the majority of these channels' content.
Mm.
Then we've got listeners, episode 11, I Am the Resurrection, in which all our supporting cast gets together, puts a plan together, they carry out the plan, and it doesn't work.
Of course it doesn't work. It's episode 11 of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be weird if one of our leads is off camera for most of the episode and all the other supporting characters get everything sorted out.
And that'd be really funny if he showed up and everything was done. It's like, oh, I was slightly late.
Everything we've been showing about the earless and the king of the ears listeners and all that, we have to resolve this in an alternate way that doesn't involve shooting a giant laser at us that I've been doing for the last 10 years.
Mm.
To which, like, Kevin Shields' great plan, what if we hooked up all the equipments and shot an even bigger laser at it? I like the way you're thinking, Shields. This might just work.
yes, but they're trying to. The plan is to somehow save Moo in the process.
Hmm. It's almost just like, okay, we're going to fire a giant laser at her. It'll obliterate the King of the Earless. Won't it obliterate Moo as well? Maybe not.
I think the thing they're probably aiming for is the robot. I mean, like, she's standing on the robot, so...
Yes, you know, it's the core they're trying to
because they keep saying, it's like, that's the most powerful robot. It's more powerful than my entire city. Even if I fired my big laser, it wouldn't work. So, yeah.
Yes, it's definitely the robot they're trying. They seem to think it's the robot influencing her. But
because, yeah, it's your man's robot and it was the most powerful giant. Yeah.
She's still standing right there, though.
Yeah, she's still standing on it. I mean, like, even if you shot it from underneath her, she'd fall fucking down. So it's not great.
He's carrying out tough stuff, though.
But we do know that there's something. There's still Mu in her because Mu warns Echo's sister before. The earless arrive.
Yeah, and the fun poor mayor of Suscott and Dom was getting the townspeople just like browbeating them to putting the monument to admonishing back up when they dig up the gate from the first concert 10 years ago. Albert erupts, although they're earless, and they knock over the monument again.
That's the first thing they do when they get out.
It's like they know somehow. Like they are aware of what this represents.
What would break your heart? I was sure it was going to hit him this time, but he was saved by Mu again, kind of. Yeah.
But yeah, so the bulk of the episode is the various people putting aside the differences, realizing they've changed because they've met Mu and Echo.
I did like you one from Noam saying is like, I'm not going to forgive you, but like we can work together on this thing because we like the same person. We want to help him.
Yeah. Mm. And then at the end, they notice, or Echo's sister spots Echo with their core, with his hands behind his back, looking up at where Mu is in the giant beam of light.
Yeah. I suppose, in fairness to the Player Alliance, they did manage to destroy the Dual Showman. It's just they didn't realize that there was a larger, scarier robot underneath that's got
yes,
devil
like
horns,
an earless one. Yeah, yeah. It was nearly like a shell for the whatever kind of earless type thing there was inside there.
So next week, I guess it's going to be up to Echo to find the solution, as it should be in this simple story.
Rock out.
I mean, like, watching all this, the thing of, like, all the people coming together to put on one really good concert and the disparate music guys all working together and all that thing. I didn't need to see a bunch of, like, little kids dressed as mods, like, bleeding out on the ground. That was like, Jesus, that's a bit fucking much.
Sure you
did. Charles Soldiers gets you.
I suppose it is. Yeah.
If you don't want to see it, then don't fucking participate in it. Don't put children in your army. Mm.
It's. Did you read any? But either of you read the interview with Dysato on
News
Network? It really did not illuminate anything. It was really. I mean, the questions weren't good, but the answers weren't very good either.
It's
very surface.
Very much fun. Watch and see. Please enjoy it.
Yes. I know they've been doing like post episode Zoom chats on YouTube, but that's all in Japanese. Okay. So I'm sure there'll be more information there. But I did laugh when I was just looking at Clickhole and one of the new articles on Clickhole is truly depressing. This elderly 36-year-old man is babbling incoherently about something called My Bloody Valentine.
But it was anything you could derive from this interview. It was the sense of why they kind of leaned the way they did. But they say it was not because, but this is what I was listening to when I was younger and my sister wasn't for my sensibilities going forward, but they kind of skewed older because we're going to have these countries or lands like represented by music and what their kind of theme is to kind of get to place the kind of history and culture and heritage kind of leans more towards these classic quote-unquote era rock musicians which we can already kind of glean but a little bit of a
one of the producers, the co-creator, is he a musician or is he something to do with the music industry? I can't remember.
He's a musician, I believe. Is. Yeah. I think anybody who's like, no, I think he's primarily like a music producer or is very much involved in that end. But I'd say probably has some ability as a musician to have this much. Input into it, I think.
Yeah, it just felt like that was like, I've had this idea, please turn this into something which would work as a TV show. Created by Jin, but he does not have an English language Wikipedia page to tell me more about him. But yeah, good stuff. Moves at a fair old clip. Say, content-wise, there's not that much content, but it's more all character.
It's because of so many different characters interacting. Yeah.
It was it's good to see them all in one place and bounce off each other rather than just their interactions with Moo and Echo. Even if a lot of what they say is how much they've changed as people because of politics and Echo.
And it's also the thing of, like you say, it's not the last episode. They're all like, "We're going in for one final strike," and then their big laser doesn't work. And I was like, "Well, yeah, I didn't think it was going to work." And then the combined efforts of Nirvana and what band was your one again?
My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah, the two of them flying their robots at it. And it's like, what makes you think you can beat Prince and everyone else plugged into Prince?
Which is good, there's not too much content, because Wave listened to me had more than enough.
Oh my god, yeah.
More than it needed as well. Episode 11, I Don't Fear Anaerobic Creatures. As we open where we left off with the remainder of their radio play.
Was the radio play like only the first half of the episode? Because it felt like so fucking much.
It must run to about the 15-minute minus ads of the actual radio play in terms of this bit and the bit from the previous episode.
Yeah.
It starts with a really great gag of her complimenting the zombie Mitsuo's arm strength for being able to dig out the ground from so deep. But
I buried you that far down deep, you know, yeah. Good stuff.
You gotta go underground, you gotta meet the master. The master has all the answers you're ever gonna need. I suppose he gets pulled down the literal and figurative rabbit hole. And
like,
then
the sound effects are so fucking good, except for the fucking slide whistle, which made me laugh pretty much every time they fucking used it.
The golden nuts, though, like, you know, when in the play they get pulled down the hole, just like they're tearing and breaking wood. You got Mizuho, she's like got boxing gloves on, she's like pounding away in a bit of sheet metal. All the classics. And also, then when you get underground, the Foley dude, the thin lad, he's just going like making didgeridoo noises next to them.
Mouth. He's like, "Oh, I've never done underground noises before."
Yeah, because that's the nice bit is we get little bits of inner monologue as well of both them and Minare. As they meet the master and basically they're asked to give up their karma. And basically, like, it's like things they want to change about themselves in their
it's
next lives.
It's a regret they've had that they need to let go of or confront. And,
so they can move on to their next...
They want to get a second chance in life. So
Matt the Hitman wants to not be tempted into the underworld life. And Mitsuo's thing is about him not realizing how badly he behaves.
Yeah, it's like, even if I apologize for the things I've done wrong, I don't understand what I've done wrong, so I'm guessing that's my major flaw.
Let's do it again, over and over.
Exactly.
The first one gets reincarnated as a Norwegian, and the second one gets reincarnated as Swedish. And she's like, "Why are you doing this?" It's because they've got welfare in Sweden.
It's like, oh, they're doing pretty good. Security, I mean, like, socially, yeah. It's a good get if you can get reincarnated.
if you want to, like, have a best shot at rebuilding your life, at rebuilding your soul in the purest way imaginable, then you should give you a good start to make sure you get a good education. If you can't get work, then you're taken care of. You know, it'll be okay. You can focus on yourself and being a good person.
And then Minari's bit for her regrets is just ad lib from here on out.
That was really fucking funny. And she's just like, kind of looking at it, and she doesn't get a chance to go, like, okay.
This fucking guy obviously throwing me right into it.
And then she basically just let rips about all the things she regrets from the previous episode.
Like, literally talking about people who are literally listening to the radio at that point.
Yes. But she refuses to be reincarnated as a European, She wants to be a wandering Japanese woman.
Hmm. And she wants to make like restitution for all the things, yes, all the problems that she's caused, rather, yep, than be reincarnated and just like, I'm not going to give up on my sins. I'm going to try and make them better.
They don't want to be let off the hook.
Yeah,
for,
yeah,
this. The right thing to do, like to truly grow as a person going forward, is to accept these things and make amends for them, not to just try and wipe your slate clean. Because that's the sort of the maybe a fallacy what people would try to do that. They're thinking, oh, if I just start over again, and you know, if I got a setback in, you know, personal life or job or anything else, that's why it's to start it over again, throw it all out and start over again, rather than maybe come to terms and face the consequences of your actions,
yeah,
and try to learn from that and build upon it, rather than just throwing everything out that you could have learned from it.
Mm.
Yeah, or as what she says, I don't care if Mount Fuji blows up and I'll kill you.
I haven't got a way of words like she does, so I'll do my best here.
But also we see that one line she has echoes with a line that the woman who Mato was enamored with in the past had, yeah, said to, I'm not sure if you're saying
like
to
some of her last,
yeah,
words,
must be to him, because it's about, well, we say last words, but her story seems to get slightly less and less tragic each time we see it. Because we see the car crash, but she appears to have survived the car crash at the end. She just has damaged her throat, presumably ending whatever career.
Well, yeah, it's the thing she was talking about on the phone is, I don't want to go to England and do all the kind of Monty Python stuff. I have a really good idea for like a Japanese radio show. What do you think about, Jesus, car crash, my throat's ruined. I guess that's not happening. So, yeah.
But I do like how these flashbacks have slowly got, as we get more information, they're not as quite as bleak as it at first, because initially appeared, oh, she went to England and she never came back. And then it became,
as long as she came back.
She came back.
She got better.
Then she died, and then it's like, okay, she came back and she was in an accident which may have ruined her career, but does not appear to have died in this flashback.
I'm gonna guess she didn't even like ruin her career. I'm gonna guess her throat was actually fine, and she it just basically, she was going to do this idea but then was furloughed at doing that idea, so she never went and did it. And he's like, but that was such a good idea, I wish you'd done that.
Yeah, was it, I feel like Mato, maybe in a sense, he's just doesn't regret, this person hasn't done my life anymore. It's more like, no, that would have been a fucking class radio show I could have made my career on. I gotta try and reintroduce
that. It's the
death
of the idea that is really bugging him, rather than a death of a person with the idea.
Yeah, I'm almost half suspecting for her to turn out to be his wife.
You remind me of my wife. Yeah, that seems like a kind of thing he'd be, for sure.
Yeah, then we get them discussing the show with Kareko.
I did like the after thing where they're all just having like coffee and everything. That's fun.
Where she's like, Kareko hates me. She goes, I don't hate you. It's just work.
I believed in you.
Yeah, it's like I leave it to you because like you need the, as a radio personality, the main thing you need is to be able to ad-lib. And you're good at that. So I'm trying to bring you up in that. Yeah. And she's like, it's because you love me. And it's like, I don't fucking love you. It's work.
It's just a job.
And that's constantly, she constantly boils it down to, it's like, we really love each other and we care about each other as a team. It's like, it's just fucking work. Jesus, calm down.
But the other ones who were roped in, they think, that was pretty good. And actually really impressed by her.
I did like the way she couldn't figure out that the recording for the god. She was trying to figure out, wait, who's playing god here? Is that your man? It's really well mixed. It sounds like a woman's voice. It's like, but she's responding to you in the ad lib bits. How the hell do you think they pre-recorded that?
There's another bit where someone comments that the reason why Kareko was able to get Mitsuo's voice near enough as he could is because he apparently is a lot like him.
He sounds a bunch like him,
In how he behaves.
I thought they used Zora for that.
That was the actual voice, but in terms of the actual dialogue.
Or the writing,
The writing. They're digging on Kareko for...
Yeah, you don't get fucking people's feelings and you're constantly just trampling on them, aren't you, man? Sitting across the fucking table from his biggest fan.
We cut to... Mizuho's face staring enamored. And then we get to The discussion about has she ever actually listened to the radio before?
And him kind of going like, it's probably better that you didn't, because you don't know what not to do, and therefore you'll do it, and sometimes that's really fucking good.
Well, yeah, he says that to himself, though, after she's...
He says, of course he doesn't say it to her. He doesn't want to compliment
her. Because
he tells
her to go and listen to a specific thing with a celebrity that she likes. He's going to be on it. And then she goes back to the restaurant, and she's like, oh, I've been reincarnated, and I'm a changed woman. And then
I love that that was the opposite of like her conclusion at the radio show. Yeah. It's like, no, I'll remain me. It's like, I'm a new person. I'm going to make all exactly the same mistakes.
Yeah, then immediately makes all the same mistakes.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's really funny.
Nakahara's like,
I thought your one in the restaurant was going to just fucking deck her or something. It was just like, you motherfucker, you said you wouldn't do it. I hung up on the radio show last night because it was like, oh, it's all going to work out then. And immediately the exact same problems.
Yeah, but I assume that would have been like the end of the chapter, because this is the problem where sometimes the rhythm seems a little off in terms of fitting it into the TV show. Because then it immediately leaps to her finding the knife, which apparently Mizuho sharpens when she's stressed out.
And throws a hair on it. It's
a
like,
single
oh.
hair.
She's bad.
And then kind of confronts her about her feelings for Kureko, and then she reveals her dream was going to be, well, she's saying she hopes that Kureko wins, but Tidori apparently, when she was drunk, told Minare that her dream was she's going to become the chief director within 2 years and form a super team of her, Minare, and Kureko for a 3-hour show where anything goes.
It's fucking going to be unprecedented. It's going to be fucking sweet, man. I'll fucking direct, you be the star, and he'd be the writer. It'd be fucking brilliant. And it's just like, she's like, oh, that's actually, I guess her dream can come true now.
It's such a shame. Oh, I just want to get in there and give her a big hug, maybe sneak in a little kiss when I'm at it.
Yeah, I do like
oh,
that.
Oh, well, she's away. Yes. She's going for it.
I'm not sure if I'm ready. I'm going to close my eyes, but I'm still going to pucker.
I do like that being this slight recurring gag of her very slight sexual fantasy about her roommate.
See, I think it's like, I don't think she's gay. I think she just knows her roommate is fucking adorable.
Yeah.
It's just like, hey, no one's that fucking straight. Come
if
on.
It happened, I wouldn't be opposed to it. She's
yeah,
very
exactly.
Nice, and
exactly.
She takes very good care of me.
I would marry her if she asked me.
But then, she was actually reminding her that we're supposed to listen to the radio.
Yeah.
See, almost looking out for her.
So sweet.
They throw the radio on, it's like two lads. It's a real, even though it's late at night, it's a real kind of morning zoo, or just like one.
Yeah, it's the keeping people awake for sure, around. Radio show.
That's one of the subtitles kind of got, you know, a bit. It's here a bit of the guy starting up. We don't need to play it underneath all the way through, because they're just talking about bullshit. That's not really important to the scene as Mizuho and Minari try to actually talk about something genuine here.
Oh, you know, Funimation just maybe position that bit of dialogue at the top of the screen in a different colour.
Yeah, yep. Different font, different color, like different size or something like that. I think like the joke for the scene might be they're having like a really personal, serious conversation while this fucking bullshit is happening on the radio, which is funny. But as you're reading it, like it's given the exact same prominence as the serious personal conversation. And it's like, that doesn't fucking work. That's just annoying to read.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Mizuho explains that, yeah, no, this isn't the show he wants you to make, I think. What he wants is something more spontaneous, or as she says, anarchic.
Yeah, he wants you to listen to this. Is like, this is organized, like being wacky kind of thing. It's like, we have very specifically constructed this to be wacky and crazy. But it's like, he wants you to be wacky and crazy as is natural to you. And obviously she takes that kind of as an insult, because, you know, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, so well, maybe just something like... get ideas from the listeners. You know, you can have something like that. Could be like you're fostering new writing talent. You want to come up with it that way. But it's also like, you know, also trying to like reconcile that with Orton Mato said about, okay, people listen to this and they like react and they respond to it, and you need to kind of reciprocate that when they do that. You know, you need to really grab them, and when they reach out to you to embrace him back in again and echo back onto that. So you just have something like that where you're able to bounce off of between Monday and Death, also able to bounce off to people listening as well and get your energy off of that and your inspiration for what you want to do with the show.
Yeah, because that's what Martin told us to listen to it for, was because it's like, yeah, normally it's the relationship of the broadcaster and the listener. And as you say, that anarchic thing was the Late Night Show they're listening to is they're getting listener content, as he said. Mm. Whereas presumably what they want her to do is rile up listeners, so they call in. Because she was going to invite Nakahara on, which then that he took, of course, entirely the wrong way, as one of the examples of her getting everything wrong again immediately. He gets all his hopes up because he's, why is she telling me
she's going
that
on
she's
and
left
on, she's going on very publicly about the fact that she's cut off her ex-boyfriend. It's like, why is she saying that in front of me? Does I have a chance?
Then she invites him on the radio show. And it's like, even though I said I was against the radio show, yes. And then it cuts him down within minutes. It's like, no, that's a terrible idea.
Never mind, it's a stupid idea.
That's a terrible idea. You'd be so fucking boring with all your boring bullshit. It's like, fucking hell. Mixed signals. It's like you say, it's like it's the getting the content from the listeners is very good for a radio show, or at least the kind of radio show she's looking for. But yeah, a little bit more, if specifically antagonism might be the way of it, but it's definitely more of a back and forth rather than just a in feeding of their ideas.
She already had some experience with that.
Yeah.
Her
life was leaking into the show.
The whole thing with the bear. was feeding off of what the people were sending in. So you already have that thread. It's got to yank it a little bit more, and then she'll find what she's looking for, what's really fits her and suits her.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Yeah, that's our cliffhanger, though, is her just staring at the ceiling in bed, wondering what her radio show is going to be.
I know you're saying it's like it does mess with the pace of it, and I agree, like that was a good cutoff point for the end of the scene, this was a good cutoff point, but I mean, like, I really like that as, like, that's the, like, the cliffhanger, just, like, lying in bed going, like, the fuck am I going to do? That's pretty funny and especially appropriate for this character.
I don't know how many episodes we've got of this.
It's finished next week, it seems, or just basically preview there. Gotcha. You know, this is going to be the final one.
It did seem to be very much so wrapping it up. Here's everyone's emotions on display for the last episode.
But I believe there's still plenty of comic you can read after this finishes.
Mm.
So it may do its job. It may weave its way into me like Vinland Saga did.
Could I'm sure putting that one out now as well. So, if it's worked on me, it's as previously stated in earlier recordings, Uraki Samura, who I would only have known from Blade of the Immortal pretty much.
Mm.
And my experience is that it's that kind of thing. Maybe it's just that kind of writer. But then this is an absolute sea change from that. And it shows how much that he's developed so many other aspects of how he writes characters and how they interact. It's like we take away swords and spears and things away from them. They have to interact with people. It's much more interesting. But definitely be reading it. I would not be averse to more of this, though, because it is what really carries this is Riho Sugiyama as Minare. Just the way she's able to flip between different paces as the character of Minare is fucking impressive to listen to. And also it being a radio show, the sound design and the actual hearing of voices is obviously much better when you can actually hear them on telly.
So. And like, even like the radio show that they were presenting, the actual episode of the radio show, like I was really interested. It was like, what a fucking bizarre plot they have. But then they kept cutting back to the studio of all the people fucking around with all the sound making stuff. And I was like, this is really funny, but it's distracting me from the radio show, which I was kind of getting into. It's a really nice combination of things for sure.
Righty-ho. So in theory...
Mm.
Extra Olympia Kyklos is due back on Monday. So it won't be in next week's podcast. It'll be in the following podcast. That is the theory. I was just checking their Twitter to see if I can spot anything along those lines. But no, it's just adverts for Arete. it seems to be like within... they're just like posting screen caps and facts at the moment. There we go. And or possibly... Oh, and some behind-the-scenes videos maybe as well. We shall see whether that is back or not.
Oh, hopefully.
Hopefully we've got some Super Shearer to watch. I see Sarze-san's coming back. It's like, sure, that means anime's back now. Once Sarze-san's back.
Yeah.
Sarze-san going off the air was an ill omen. Coming back must be a good omen.
Most of them I can see are still July for the return of other things. July 7th or July 4th. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just have to keep my eye out on... That's my main worry, is these things coming back and us missing that they've come back.
Yeah, like if you weren't paying attention to your feed, it's like, oh, fuck, there was several new episodes of that.
Yeah. Whereas the ones which are just restarted again in July, I'm less concerned about those.
Yeah.
If it's starting, then it's probably like, yeah, they probably have a few of them, or at least have a situation where they can do them on the regular. Yeah.
Yeah. It's to check as well that things like, I think Apare Ramen is going to restart on July 3rd, but
I believe
it'll air the first couple of episodes
that already had already, and then it'll jump on from.
I think that's a fine way to do it, because you don't want to like put people off by like jumping into it after they've maybe not forgotten, but they've forgotten about the first few ones.
That's true. Yeah, you know, it may not have been long on the calendar, but by God, it feels like a long time.
Yeah. Also,
it's been years.
It gives whatever was supposed to be in that slot another 13 weeks.
Yeah, it puts that little delay in it. Like, while I mean, like a lot of things dropped at episode 3 or so or more. So, I mean, like if they're still doing like a full 12, 13 episode season or whatever, it'll give everything else a little buffer. Yeah.
Righty ho, that is your lot. So we just got to, before we wrap up, it's time to ask Niall, what day of the week are we recording next week?
We'll be recording on June 23rd, Tuesday.
Okie doke. 7:30 or thereabouts.
7:30.
Okie doke.
I have so much power.
You do.
Don't let it go to your head.
Buy and sell your asses.
Righty ho. Otherwise, let's quickly check in. What's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
Gargantuan, close to animated series, is up when you hear this. Got Joseph and Libby, the scholars of Kevin Smith and Kevin Smith adjacent things to come on there in Lumendale says. And quite a lot of personal histories there, going back to a lot of ex-boyfriends and teenagers stuff in there. But does it up? They share this freely and openly, and it's made for a great little show. Looking forward now to Indented Critic, which would also have Libby on board for. And sorry again to ambush her with something that she already was, a day she was already aware of, but it's all in good fun.
I don't know when the next Dynamite in the Brain episode will be recorded, but it'll be Samurai Champloo. The first 6 episodes. But if you want to watch something right now, we've got the last thing on the streaming site on twitch.tv/ Let's Go Brian is another The Anime That Didn't Make Us with Greg Driver from Ace Comicals, where we are talking, what were we talking? Zillion. We were talking Zillion. We were talking DT Atron, and we were talking Super Yo-Yo. And yo-yos in general. There's a lot of yo-yo talk. And some surprising revelations. There was a bit of Anthony There's a bit of Anthony Law that he had somehow never been mentioned previously.
Ooh, exciting.
All my time talking to him.
Ooh,
which blew my mind. So go and check that out. I'm trying to get all the backlog of podcasts. They're all off one computer and they're on this computer now, so I can actually upload them and get them up there. And hopefully everything will be back on schedule. And we're back next week, as we say, on Tuesday. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.
End.